Good evening, this is Dr. Lewis Blevins, and this evening we bring you another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. I'm joined today by the one and only Jorge Fascinetti.
Well, hello everyone. Wow, there's an introduction. Thank you. It's great to be working with you again on a podcast. I think the last one we did was on sleep apnea a few weeks ago. So it's great to be here again. And what do you have in mind for this podcast?
This evening, we're going to talk a bit about the arthropathy or articular and joint problems associated with acromegaly. Now, Jorge, you have firsthand experience with this. Why don't you relate to us your story?
Well, yes, this is a very important subject. As you know, arthritis is a big part of my story. And it was really through arthritis that my acromegaly was first recognized by Dr. John Dearborn, probably one of the best orthopedic surgeons around. And he was the one that sent me to see you, actually. I was seeing him for an extremely sore hip that required a replacement. And as you know, since then, I had two hip replaced and one knee. And most likely, the other knee will have to be replaced. Probably in the not too distant future, although I hope that won't, it's not going to be the case. Knees are a pain in the neck, so to speak. So arthritis has had a big effect in my life and has changed drastically the way I do sports and my physical activity and some of the things that I really love to do, like hiking and playing tennis. I honestly try, like everything else, not to pay too much attention to it. I really don't know if that makes sense, but I think with arthritis, like, you know, mostly the pain is there, it's always present, and we just have to deal with it.
You know, this is the frustrating part of acromegaly. We can take patients who have the disease and either cure them with surgery or control them with medications, normalize their growth hormone and IGF-1 levels, but many still have persistent complications of the disorder. And we'll cover some of those others in later podcasts, but arthritis is a classic example, and it's one of those conditions where once the disease or the damage to the joint starts, it progresses insidiously, regardless of whether or not you've controlled the disease state of acromegaly or normalized the levels, however you want to say it. Some people think that you're never cured, but you're just controlled. But at any rate, this is a frustrating problem for patients and physicians alike, and your story is not uncommon. I've seen several patients who've been through the same ringer or washer, however you want to put it. It's really unfortunate that, like, say, for example, the diabetes or the hypertension or the sleep apnea, all of which can improve and go away with treatment of acromegaly, the arthritis is something that continues to progress insidiously after treatment.
Well, yes, that progression, as you mentioned, is unfortunately very true. I've met other acromegaly patients, and arthritis is very common, and everyone pretty much deals with the same issues. And you're right, there isn't much you can do other than try to stay fit and eat well. I think I should mention for our audience that I personally try not to take any kind of pain medication, even the over-the-counter stuff, vitamin N, M, vitamin M, as a good friend of mine calls it, for Motrin. maybe once in a while, you know, once or twice a month if it gets bad enough. And I honestly hope I don't have to ever resort to pain meds. They just really don't agree with me. So, but I'm curious because I've met so many people with acromegaly, and arthritis is so present. What is the incidence or frequency of arthritic complaints in patients with acromegaly?
Jorge, that's a very good question. Over my career, I have noticed that a lot of patients have arthritic complaints. One study in particular said that musculoskeletal pain is encountered in about 70% of individuals at the time of diagnosis. And some of those problems include the arthritis, the carpal tunnel syndrome, fibromyalgia, muscle pain and weakness, etc. And the fact of the matter is, though, is that it hasn't been very well studied. We just see patients, they have the history. As endocrinologists, we usually tell them to talk to their primary physicians or see an orthopedist or whatever to undergo further evaluation. And we don't have any real specific treatments for it as endocrinologists. I do know through my experience that if we can control the acromegaly, we will see some improvement in symptoms and signs in some patients. But we don't often see the reversal, and certainly we don't see the disease stopping in its tracks. And I think this is due to the fact that once there is joint damage, that damage progresses. Damage incites inflammation. Inflammation leads to more damage, which causes more inflammation, which leads to more damage. And this is, it's this self-propagating process within the joint.
You know, that self-propagating process makes sense when I look at my case and when I hear through PWN or some of our advocacy group partners as they comment what other people are saying about their joint issues. So how do these arthritic or arthritis issues or joint problems originally start? What brings that on? Is it growth hormone level or is it IGF-1 level?
Well, what we see happening in patients with acromegaly is there's increased bone growth. That's most prevalent in the fingers, where the barrel diameter or width of the fingers enlarges over time. The same thing happens in other bones. The femur, the tibia, it's more prominent, I think, in weight-bearing bones than it is other bones, but in bones that are used a lot. But all of these bones enlarge, and when a bone enlarges before and after a joint, take the knee joint, for example, you get changes in the biomechanics of how that joint actually works. There may be changes also in the size of the cartilage in some of these patients. And then there may be changes in the composition of the synovial fluid, which is the lubrication or the oil within the joint. But with the enlargement of the bones surrounding the joint, the biomechanics of the joint change. The body doesn't work the same well it's been used to working for years, and you end up getting microtrauma within the joints. And that microtrauma is what really probably, in my opinion, sets off the start of the inflammation and the arthritis.
Huh, interesting. I never thought of it in terms of microtrauma, but as I hear you explain it, it just makes a ton of sense. In my case, I noticed increased joint pain, knees and ankles primarily, in my late 30s, I'd say, as I was then I was playing a lot of competitive tennis in club leagues, and I was running a lot and hiking a lot. So I didn't think it was unusual. I also remember pain by my mid-40s. I think it was evident then that there was a real issue with my bones. The orthopedic doctors that I saw at the time kept noticing the arthritis and prescribing mild anti-inflammatories and physical therapy. I think at 40, I had the first knee operation that was an arthroscopic operation to repair the meniscus. So for me, it's been this continuous kind of worsening, as you say, of joints, even though my acromegaly has been controlled since surgery in 2010.
Yes, it's very interesting. You know, the body's reparative responses, including an acromegaly where there's probably some proliferation of cartilage cells, leads to further damage. And it's an example of how the body doesn't often repair itself in a proper way. There are other examples that I won't go into now that we see in neurology and neurosurgery, where attempts to repair lead to disease.
Let's go back to your comment about weight-bearing bones and joints. What about other areas in the body?
Well, it turns out that arthritis of the spine is also more common in patients with acromegaly, and patients with acromegaly are more likely to develop a condition known as spinal stenosis, where the canal where the spinal cord sits is actually narrowed by the growth of the bone. Other patients have what we call kyphosis, which is the typical sort of hump of the back that some patients can get with osteoporosis. And in fact, some patients with acromegaly lose calcium from bones and have osteoporosis and associated kidney stones as well, for that matter. And then some patients actually get arthritis of where the ribs articulate with the spinal column and can have sort of a fixed barrel-chested appearance. So yes, it does affect other joints. In fact, it probably affects all joints, but we tend to, as human beings, focus on the large joints, and those are the ones that get surgical attention. But I do believe that all joints are probably affected by this condition.
That's interesting, because I remember my lower back was the first area that bothered me. I remember trying to change my tennis serving motion because at the time I thought I was getting too old, mid-30s, mind you, to serve with a lot of spin, which tends to put a lot of stress in your lower back. So I thought it was my serve, but it was really acromegaly, I'm pretty sure. I later was actually diagnosed with osteoarthritis in the lumbar region. Now I deal with it by stretching really well, particularly in the morning. But earlier you talked about, you mentioned that some people have some improvement, but the disease insidiously progresses. Is there any data that actually relates the degree of improvements experienced by patients?
Well, there was one study of 115 patients, and I believe it was published in the early 1990s. I think joint pain was present in about two-thirds of patients with acromegaly. And then in a drug treatment study that went on for 24 months, they found that joint pain improved in about 83% of patients. But that's just pain, so it's a clinical symptom-related disease. They don't really talk about whether or not the arthropathy actually progressed in the patients in that particular series. My experience, however, is that once you have the arthropathy, it's going to progress insidiously. I think that treatment probably slows it down to some extent. So Jorge, having lived with this condition and the associated arthropathy, what would be your recommendation to patients who have acromegaly about screening for musculoskeletal disorders, further evaluation of any particular joint pain that they would have, and what type of physicians would you suggest, and how should they be followed and treated?
So let me see. Well, my first recommendation would be obviously not to ignore it like I did. Before diagnosis, I thought my aches and pains were due to getting older. Obviously, that was not the case. The next thing I think to think about is nutrition and exercise. I would strongly recommend the types of food that help with inflammation. If you go to PWN, we've published several links with articles on that subject, and I will add a few new excellent links to this podcast so people can check on our site for more information on diet and nutrition for arthritis. These two things are key, and knowledge about the joint disease that one suffers is obviously also key. As you know, we've come across a tremendous amount of bad information, so sticking to known sources of information is critical. As I mentioned, we have several great sources on the PWN site. In terms of treatment strategies, I think the best advice I could give you would be to see an experienced specialist. In my case, I discuss it with my internist who will recommend a course of action. I was really very lucky to land at a great joint replacement facility here in the Bay Area. But for ongoing treatment, for me, the best course of action is to talk to my general internist, who then recommends arthritis, pain, joint, or bone specialist as I need them, which I'm sure I will as we move forward. I think it would be really important to have, we shouldn't really have a discussion about pain without mentioning the current opioid crisis and the mess that the overconsumption of these drugs and prescription of these opioids have created. I personally, as I said, prefer to take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and Tylenol when I need it. So I could not caution people enough against taking these narcotics to treat arthritic pain from acromegaly. These are dangerous and devastating drugs that create more problems, in my opinion, than they resolve.
I absolutely agree with you, Jorge, especially given the knowledge that we have now about the addictive potential of narcotic drugs, even in people who've had no previous exposure or tendency to use substances illicitly. The way these drugs affect the brain, anybody can be at risk to have an addiction to these drugs, and they should be used cautiously and sparingly to treat pain disorders, including and maybe especially the arthropathy of acromegaly.
I couldn't agree more. When I had to take them post-surgery, I did not like their effect on me at all. So I really couldn't wait to stop taking them. Luckily, my surgical outcomes were excellent, and I was able to manage my post-surgical pain with mostly with ibuprofen and Tylenol, which is great. Well, Dr. Blevins, this, as always, has been a very interesting conversation and discussion, and I am sure very helpful to our acromegaly audience as they deal with these insidious chronic conditions. I wish there was better news, so to speak, about what can be expected after successful acromegaly treatment in regards to joint disease.
I agree. I certainly wish that I could do more for my patients in that realm of their underlying disease process. But the good news is that we can get control in most patients and slow down the joint disease. And many patients will live with just a low-grade arthritis and not have to have anything done. Others, such as you, will have to proceed with major joint replacement. But that's our goal of early diagnosis and treatment, is to prevent it from getting to the stage where surgical intervention will ultimately be required.
I could not have said that better. Awareness is knowledge, and exposing people to good information is key for them to manage their disease. In the case of arthritis, early diagnosis is a game changer because, as you said, the damage can be slowed and maybe a diagnosis not be as severe if we catch people early. This has been a very interesting discussion, and I've enjoyed discussing this topic with you, and hope that it's been useful to our audience.
Jorge, as usual, I enjoyed it as well. Thanks very much for chatting with me. Good evening to you, and good evening to all of you out there listening to us. Please, as usual, give us your feedback, provide us your comments, inquire about topics, because your questions often lead to the recognition that we need to develop literature or podcasts to further inform our listeners and those who follow us at Pituitary World News on both our website at pituitaryworldnews.org and on our Facebook pages. Have a good evening, everyone.